to Viva Politics Podcast, a podcast about the intersection of politics, media, and pop culture, hosted by a Generation X veteran political consultant, Dr. Laura Barbarena, and the Viva Politics Office millennial, Lauren Coronado.
Good afternoon, Lauren. I am so excited about today's podcast. Guess what?
What?
We have a very special guest with us today.
Who is she?
She is an amazing individual and someone who I'm proud to call my friend. Ladies and gentlemen, drum roll please. We have with us the incredible Delia Garcia, who actually happens to be the Secretary of Labor for the great state of Kansas. Yes,
yes. Welcome, Madam Secretary.
Thank you. Thank you. It's great to be here.
So, Madam Secretary, we've known each other for a while, but I just wanted to let our listeners know a little bit about yourself. Yeah, obviously, you ran for a state rep seat before you became the Secretary of Kansas, Secretary of Labor of Kansas. So just tell us a little bit about sort of how you got into politics and who is Delia Garcia?
Well, it's great to be back with you, Dr. Barbarena, and the whole Viva Politics. I would say I started the venture of public service with my family. My family, we own the oldest family-owned Mexican restaurant in Kansas. It's Tex-Mex Food because my mom's from the Valley. And early on, at an early age, I learned engaging people, community service. At the age of 10, I was excited because I could then be the cashier and hostess. Oh. So it was already then at an early age I was being exposed. Little did I know and acknowledge that I was already developing those leadership skills, some that we don't acknowledge. So fast forward, I was involved in the American GI Forum when I was 13 years old, and then a whole bunch of student organizations. And I got to see actually San Antonio Mayor Henry Cisneros on stage one time in Chicago at the United States Hispanic Leadership Conference, where I saw the possibility of a Latino being in a leadership political position. But then I still doubted myself, that little voice. And it wasn't until I saw Gloria Molina, the first Latina elected in California, where I saw it was possible. So I knew in my head, I made a promise to myself, I'm going to run for office one day. I thought, I'm going to do it at 36. Little did I know it would happen at 26.
Oh, wow.
So in 2004, I was here in San Antonio getting my master's. And I got the phone call April 2004 to return home to Kansas and run for state representative open seat. So in August, I graduated and I was elected in the primary election and made history as the youngest woman and first ever Latina.
That's amazing.
Yes.
Quebrando.
So I was making laws for 6 years.
Nice.
Yes.
That's amazing. And so then after you, you served for how many terms?
Three terms.
Yeah. Yes. What did you find was the most challenging thing that you faced being, I mean, not just being a woman, but also being like a Latina and so young?
Yes.
What were some of the challenges you faced and who were some of the people that you looked for mentorship?
Uh-huh. And I'm glad you said the mentorship because I had a kitchen cabinet made of mentors. One whom we share, Reverend Andrea Hernandez, and people like yourself who, when I was running, helped me with my own campaign. And it was really my familia and friends that it was no fancy political consultant that cost $1 million. We had it within us. And so I think that was something I was very proud of, that I included everybody, my family, my friends, and I made it fun. And so many people, I think, got to see the possibility of what public service looks like and can look like. Your question was to why, what had...
Yeah, what were some of the challenges that you faced being...
So the challenges, there was one every day.
Of course.
I would say I was scared then. Mm-hmm. I'm so glad that I was tested because it made me stronger and stronger and stronger and acknowledge the power that I did have. And really try and grow that and flex it. But, you know, anywhere from a legislator telling me that I spoke good English, even though the English was my first language, to being on the House floor in the middle of the night and trying to fight off repealing in-state tuition and me not being an attorney, but thank goodness I had amazing friends like Maldiff. Who worked, and I had them on my cell phone and called them in the middle of the night for them to give me, the talking facts so that I could go to the microphone and kill the bad amendments. And we, to this day, I'm proud to say, still have that law in place. So it was things like that. And then, you know, stuff like healthcare, access to healthcare for my constituents, not just Latinos, it included Latinos, but So being able to listen was a key, you know, skill to have with my constituents. And even now that I'm running a state agency, more than ever.
Mm-hmm. One thing I love about you is that you know everyone. So whenever I travel, if I'm in Chicago or LA and I meet someone, I'm like, you probably know my friend, Secretary Delia Garcia. And they're like, oh yes, I know Delia. And you have this amazing, like, incredible network. I mean, I'm just like flabbergasted. And I was telling Lauren as we were preparing for this interview that, that there's something also about you that you and Lauren share, and that you both were in sororities.
Mm. Yes. I love networks.
So I wasn't not in a sorority, but there's different kinds of sororities, mm-hmm. but you've relied a lot on, so I just wanted, maybe we can talk a little bit about these sororities and kind of how they've helped in your career. So Lauren, you were in which sorority?
Yes. I am a proud alumna of Alpha Delta Pi sorority.
Nice.
Yeah. And I think it was really great. The leadership experience you gain, and something I don't think a lot of people talk about, is being in such a large group of women, being in a sorority teaches you how to work well with other women, mm-hmm. which isn't as natural as people would think it is.
Mm-hmm. And I loved my sorority. So I'm a member of Kappa Delta Chi alumna. Mm-hmm. And we're a Latina service sorority, so it's not your mainstream sorority, mm-hmm. but we made it mainstream in Kansas. and I think that was the beauty of it. In Kansas, we were the first chapter of Kappa Delta Chi, and we provided that space for other Latinas in a campus that's not, like, we were 6%, I think 4% at the time. We're now 6% mm-hmm. of the university. And so it was that familia status, and it's not that's the beginning of it, and really growing it. And so whatever city I would go to, well, I was very active. I still am active on mm-hmm. social media. So they would be like, oh, you're the one who's, you know, does this. And so when I go to LA on my way to Mexico, and I had a layover, I'm like, I need somewhere to stay for 8 hours. And they're like, we'll come get you and feed you. And mm-hmm. and then when they come through DC, when I was living in DC, I'd do the same, just treating others as you want to be treated. But you know, that network of, we stood for unity, honesty, integrity, and leadership. So leadership is the one mm-hmm. I really like to push and grow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you're also very good friends with tons of elected officials,
yes.
tons of community activists.
Yes.
I know that every time that Dolores Huerta's in town, you always manage to get us in her orbit, which yes. I'm very grateful for, because she's someone that you're very close to and yes. is also one of your mentors,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, she's been a great mentor. I met her, she doesn't remember, but in 2000 at the DNC election, or the DNC in Los Angeles, when Gore Lieberman was running. But it wasn't until 2004 we met in DC at the CHCI gala, and we became homies ever since. When there was rough times, when I would cry, when we were dealing with tough things on the House floor, I'd call her and she would just walk me through it. And then when I moved to DC, she would stay at my house, and then just... Mm-hmm. She's just energy, and this such an inspiration. I want to be like her. And so it was amazing and so powerful. And I get choked up when I think about it. But she got to attend my swearing in June. And that was just a powerful moment for the state of Kansas to see the largest room in the state capitol building filled to 210 people. We thought only 40 were going to show up. And it just was just this amazing day with a trio of women, the governor, who she's awesome, and Governor Kelly, and then a nun who mm-hmm. said a prayer, and all I have four sisters, and my mother who held the Bible. So it was all an all-female cast, and mm-hmm. just to have the community see that. All my sorority sisters were there and were able to go. And at one point, first of all, there's never music at any of these. I had music. So when the music came on, I just... The energy just was electric, and I pulled her by her hand, and we danced, and it was just such a historical, beautiful moment. And even the governor said, we have never seen a swearing in like this ever. So we keep making history, and that's the other thing is having fun doing this. It's a lot of hard work.
Yeah. You know? So I was just going to ask, what exactly does a Secretary of yes. Labor do?
Well, so it's funny because earlier I spoke today and I said, yeah, I made laws for 6 years. Like, it's nothing, right? So now I'm running an agency of about 402 people, and it may get bigger pretty soon, hopefully. And so I basically run an agency where we are supporting and working with employees, workers, laborers, and in business and industry, and how do we grow the economy and make sure that should a recession hit, that we're ready. If an injured worker is injured, that we have, we're giving, delivering the best customer service on the resources. When someone's unemployed, that we help them as well. And then also, a lot of people don't know this, but the Department of Labor in every state and at the federal level, we have the most economic data in our labor market information system. So what that means is we have all the numbers that show where the job labor market is. And like, if I'm going to college, I'm a job seeker, I want to know what's the best jobs to look at. A lot of college people or even just young people don't even know that. And we have an aging workforce that is, we have a lot of baby boomers that are about to retire, some who are able to retire and some who aren't. They didn't plan ahead for whatever reason, and they're going to have to retrain and get back into the workforce. So what is my agency doing? And we're really excited about some of those opportunities, but we know that some of that will be challenging. And one of the things, the approaches that I'm very proud of my team, a team that I am very proud of putting together, but we have made some stuff that's a little boring, like numbers, but I like to tell stories. Uh-huh. I think stories are super powerful. And when you can tell a story with data, people understand it better.
That's great. Well, we were also talking before the interview, because mm-hmm. yesterday you were wearing this really cute shirt with a giant concha on there.
Yes.
Pan dulce concha. And yes. And I was sharing with you that a few months ago, I had the opportunity to be at Texas A&M San Antonio, where we gave a little conference on imposter syndrome. Yes. And you and I were talking about that because maybe we'll do a podcast on imposter syndrome later, Lauren. Mark that down so we can make a note of that. But I do want to talk a little bit about that, because, you know, a lot of times someone of your, you know, humble beginnings who ends up in this position, you start to like doubt that you really belong, or yes. you feel sort of this, because you are the first, yes. like, you know, why you, why not someone else, or yes. do I really belong here? Can you talk a little bit about how you kind of work through that, and how do you get those negative thoughts out of your head and really own the fact that you belong in a space?
Mm-hmm. I'm really glad that you asked that question, because it's been something that I've, you know, obviously dealt with a lot. And the one thing that gets me through is, one, you know, God and my family. But I think one of the most powerful thing is my networks of mm-hmm. friends, my other fellow chingonas. I couldn't get through some of that if I didn't make the space of making sure that I have some downtime to be with my friends, my sorority sisters, my family, to regenerate my soul and my heart, to keep me going. You know, one thing I had shared yesterday is affirmations are important. I have a sticker on one of my phones that says chingona. And I'm also educating my staff what chingona means. But to have that up, because I have to remind myself that I am that. And then I go to bed and I doubt myself. And then I have to remind myself, no, I'm running a freaking agency. Right. I'm one of the youngest women mm-hmm. who's doing this. And the only second Latina in the entire country. Massachusetts and myself are the ones in the country right now that are Department of Labor secretaries. So it's like, oh, okay. But I'm sometimes moving so fast that I need to take that time to just inhale and exhale. But I think to write it home a little more is talking about it. When I say it out loud, it helps me, and it helps others see that, oh, that's normal. I know people appreciate that whenever I've shared that vulnerability, they're like, oh, that was so cool. You said that, or you're really authentic. And I'm like, that's just normal. And I think there's not enough people feel comfortable things like that, because, oh, we had to be so political. If you look, you know, like you're going to cry, then you don't ever want to, you know, look weak. And it's not weak. It's being real and it's being authentic. And that is what's missing in this country right now.
One of the things that I love about you is that you don't just look forward, you also look behind you. I always feel like you're very conscious about the next generation. Mm-hmm. You're very much into developing the next generation of leaders. Yes. You make a point to visit universities and yes. speak to young people. Talk a little bit about that, and sort of what do you see your mission being when it comes to the Latinx generation, and you know, what that means in your life.
I love my Latinxes. They keep me young, and they're smarter than me when it comes to social media and just phones in general. But, you know, that's one thing I love and see at Dolores, when she is around young people, because, you know, she's also Katie Kai. And so I always know which chapter she has, because she'll be in the middle and she's throwing up the signs. But, you know, one of the things that I make it a point and intentional is because somebody did that for me. And I want to, it's a it's a privilege. It's a responsibility for me to do this. I know and acknowledge that I am in a definitely privileged space, and I need to get open that door for others. People have done that for me. I stand on the shoulders of many people, my grandparents, my grandmothers, Dolores Huerta, all my friends who've done it. And I, for me, it's shame on me if I don't do that. And so when I did leave office, I made sure one of my interns was ready to go, and she still holds that seat today. And I want to make sure that the next Secretary of Labor, hopefully she's like me. But being intentional, when Hillary Clinton was running for president, I hosted these parties across the country, about 9 different states. And when we put it together, it was so powerful and synergetic. Even Hillary Clinton used my living room in her Newsweek magazine when she announced presidency because of the makeup of these parties. And what I did was I had 3 and 3 millennials and 3 veteranas co-host it, because I was doing something intentional. I knew at some point, well, I was hoping Hillary would be president, but I knew the energy that would come around it. And so, again, being intentional to put certain people in the room, because that's been provider for me.
Cool. I just had another question. What do you think you're going to be in 5 years, 10 years? What sort of things are you thinking about? What's on your radar? What's on your bucket list of doing? You can check off the barbacoa bowl that you have off of your bucket list that we ate earlier today. Barbacoa bowl check.
Okay,
but what are some things on your bucket list that you get done?
Are you talking professionally? Are you talking
both professionally and personally? Because oftentimes there's a sort of a balance of what you have to do. So sometimes, you know, our personal lives suffer from our professional lives, or our personal lives suffer from personal lives. Yeah. So yeah, just what are some in both categories?
Yes. So I know a lot of other people have some plans for me, but I got to own my space. You know, it's so crazy of people like, oh, governor next or member of Congress. But for me, look, both times when I ran for office, I didn't think I was going to do that at the age of 26. Being sworn in at 27. I didn't think 10 months ago today that I was going to be the Secretary of Labor running an entire agency. So what I have learned was that I just need to be ready. And so, and I love, love, love public service and bringing others to the table, serving as that catalyst. And so for me, that's what the future holds. I don't know what that looks like, but I'm open to it. And I trust that God will put me at the right place at the right time. What is exciting to me is the demographics in this country and where workforce goes and where I'm going to be able to be position myself as a leader in that space. So I know whatever it is going to be great, which is why it's important for me to take care of my health and mental health. I think it's important to admit and share out loud that I had a depression point after we lost the presidential election. And it was a solid 4 to 6 months. And then when I got help, and again, my sisters across the country helped support that. And the fact that I talk about it out loud, it's important to share the others so that people know that they're not alone and that it's important to do things for our health. So making that a priority too, because if I want to, you know, stick around longer to serve the community, I got to love myself first before I can share that love with others. So, you know, the health piece, but traveling more. I love traveling. I would like to have a life partner at some point. I don't have the desire to have any children because I love being the best tía. But, you know, I think that's important to say out loud too, because as a second generation Latina, I know a lot of times we have that extra, you know, pressure to get married, to have children. And I remember having that conversation with my mother. It was a really deep, tough love conversation to say, Mom, you hurt my feelings every time you ask me, have you met somebody, as if that defines who I am.
Right.
And then she got to see, I just flew her out to DC and she got to see my life and like, okay. Mm-hmm. and to know that, share with others that there's love in different ways. And I think anybody who knows me, and you can follow me on social media, Madam Secretary Dela Garcia.
Oh, excellent. I love it. Love it.
That there's, you know, other ways of love.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome. Well, I'm just so glad that you're here to share your love, your knowledge, your worldview. I adore you.
I adore you too, Dr. Barbara Ferdinand.
I look forward to watching the many great things that you're going to be doing. And you are just one of those people who I'm always amazed at you. Like, I'm thinking to myself, does she have 24 hours in the day? Because she seems to have more hours in the day than I do. How does that work?
It's vitamins.
So I'm just so glad that you stopped in, and I really appreciate it. So let people know again where they can find you on social media, because I really want them to follow you and, yes, and watch it. So you
can see our fabulous work at the Kansas Department of Labor. We're on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. If you want to follow me individually, Madam Secretary Dele Garcia on Facebook.
Thank you. Well, thank you, Madam Secretary, for coming.
Yes,
and we're so so glad you came in, and we look forward to hearing all about your great. Maybe we should do this like once a year, like
check in
with Delia, with Madam Secretary.
I did the State of Labor for the first time with social media. It's the first time it's ever been done. It was so cool.
Really awesome.
Next, we're gonna do an avatar of me.
So cool. Well, thank you, Delia, Madam Secretary, and we'll see you guys next time.
That wraps up this week of Viva Politics Podcast. Be sure to follow us on Instagram at Viva Politics Pod, and you can find us on Twitter at Viva Politics. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss an episode. We release new episodes every Monday. Bye.